Sorry. I said the wrong name. Our speaker's name is Anita, so let's give her a hand.
My name's Anita. I am an alcoholic. Yeah, I changed my name. I did tell her I was Claudia. You know, it's been a really good week for me. It's been a really good month for me. I got to celebrate two birthdays. I just turned 50, and I'm the newest tribal elder on my reservation. Our elders are 50 years old, and that's really cool. I just celebrated my 27th birthday, March 8th. You know, I didn't remember committing to come into this meeting, and Bill had texted me, and I said I didn't think I was speaking. Well, actually, somebody else had texted me and said, "Hey, I heard you're speaking." And I said, "No, I'm not speaking." And then Bill texted me, and anyway, I'm here. You know? Even though, like I said, it's been a really good month. And when I say that, I've had two deaths in my family in the last 2 weeks, and I've been up and back and forth in Porterville before Easter and after Easter, and I was on my way home yesterday, and I made it to a partially made it to a meeting. I left at 8 o'clock because I had other plans already set up. But I am grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because in the last 27 years, my life has changed immensely. When I say that, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was literally barefooted. I didn't know what state of mind I was in other than being wild. You know, I really thought that I was the beast without a tail. I didn't like the way I was living. I didn't like the way I was drinking. I didn't like the family I was with. I didn't like to look in the mirror. I didn't like the house I was living in. I just didn't like anything about me. And I stayed drunk a lot. But in the beginning, you know, when I was growing up, I lived on the reservation, up on my mom's reservation off and on, and my dad's reservation here in Lemoore. I mean, over there in Lemoore, not here, but... you know, and so I'd go back and forth as a child, and the reason for that was because my mother's mother was an abusive grandmother to me, and only to me in the family. I didn't know why she didn't take it out on any of my other siblings. When I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had to deal with some of that stuff. Actually, I didn't have to deal with some of it. I had to deal with all of it. And I never knew what kind of miracle this program was going to give me. I didn't know that my life was going to change as much as it did. I am actually very, very grateful to be in this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason for that is when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a kid. I was a kid. I was 22 years old when I came into this program. There was a kid that used to hang out with me. He knows who he is by now because I just came into this meeting and I haven't seen him in a long time. But I tell you what, he was a good friend of mine when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and he knew that. When I had about 21 months sober, I made a decision. Actually, I had 19 months sober. I made a decision to move to Porterville, and I moved back to my mom's reservation, and there was a reason for that. I knew that I had some stuff that I had to deal with while I was there, and the reason why is because it was the darkest time of my childhood. There was a lot of pain and a lot of suffering going on, but I went back to the reservation, and I didn't know what I was there for other than I knew I had to face some of my fears. My grandmother lived on that reservation still, and my sponsor told me that it'd be a good idea if I go visit my my grandmother every now and then. I didn't want to do those things. I did not want to go talk to my grandma. I didn't want to go spend time with her. Since I was a child, I was afraid of her. She couldn't look at me from across the room, and I knew I wasn't welcomed in her home. I was dealing with a lot of pain and a lot of emotion at this time. My sponsor I found up in Springville, and when I moved back home, back to Lemoore, my sponsor told me that I was going to need to get another sponsor because she knew that I was about to ready to deal with the meat and the problems in my home, in my family, and all the pain and suffering where a lot of this stuff had come from. You know, I had a lot of mental disorders. I had a lot of other issues. It had nothing to do with my drinking. That did not cause me to start drinking. And the reason why I'm really grateful to be in this meeting tonight, because when I moved back to Porterville, I chose to move, and I was living in my car, and I was also living in a cardboard box. It was actually a big wooden box, one of those crates, and it was up in the mountains on a dirt road, and the guy that just walked in tonight that I gave a hug to, he was there with me during that time, off and on. And so it's really good to see you here tonight. It really is. And the minute I seen you and I gave you a hug, I knew that I was here for a reason. God does for me what I can't do for myself. I always think about this guy quite often. And the reason for that is because one time me and him were sitting across the table and we were talking. And he was talking about his low self-esteem. Nobody had a low self-esteem like I did. And he was the first guy that ever admitted that he had a low self-esteem. And I couldn't believe that because he was a beautiful young man with blue eyes. He was a very handsome young man. And I couldn't believe that he had such a low self-esteem like me. See, I knew where my self-esteem came from. I knew where all that came from, but I didn't know it until I did my fourth step. You know, I didn't realize that a lot of this pain and a lot of the suffering that I had been living and carried it on into my youth, into my adulthood, went along. I also took in my drinking. I started drinking when I was 8 years old. Like I said, it wasn't my family problems. It wasn't the issues that I was dealing with my grandmother not knowing why she was abusive towards me. That's not what got me to drink. What got me to drink, it was freezing cold. And all my uncles were winos, and would go fishing with my uncles. My dad would pick up 2 bottles of wine and would wait at the bottom of the hill and would pick up my uncles and would drive up to the lake. And they'd build fire and they'd all be drinking their wine. And I was freezing cold. My dad knew he couldn't take me out on the lake, so he told me to go ahead and stay there with my uncles. I was afraid of my uncles because they were big and they were ugly. They were beat up and they had all these scars and scratches. And I couldn't understand the way they talked because they had such a pidgin and such a slang. And they were scary. They had bad skin and bad teeth, and I was very afraid of them. One of my uncles suggested to told my dad to let me have a shot of wine, and he filled up this cap and he gave it to me, and I loved it. I loved the way it made my ears feel. I wasn't afraid of my uncles at that point. In fact, I couldn't wait to go back fishing and pick them up. I couldn't wait to do those kinds of things, you know. During that winter, after the winter was over, we went back up into the lake when my dad stopped, picked up the 2 bottles of wine, and we kept on going. My uncles didn't show up, and I kept thinking, how am I going to get a drink? How am I going to get a drink? It's somewhere at the end of February, and it's not cold anymore, but I'm shivering. I want to stay close to that wine. And I did, and I don't remember what happened next. I do remember breaking the seal of the wine. I remember my dad telling me to go ahead and stay in there, and I remember literally thinking, go ahead and take it, you know. So I did, and again, like I said, that was the last time I drank until I was 10 years old. I was 10 years old. I was back on my dad's reservation, my uncles, they were all cowboys, so they'd always have parties and whatnot. I learned how to drive a tractor. It was a 3-speed on the column. I used to go with my grandmother, the grandmother that raised me, the grandma that showed me a lot of her culture. I used to go up with her into the mountains and dig roots for her, and she did a lot of basket weaving. She did a lot of traditional things, and she got good money for doing those things. I never learned how to do it, but she had me doing all the picking. And anyway, she would have me go up with her and do these things, and I kind of lost my train of thought. But you know, my grandmother who raised me, she always gave me love. She always made my bed. There was always food on the table. I know where I was getting back with the 3-speed on the column. So she's working out in the great fields out in Dinuba, and I used to box the grapes. And I didn't like boxing the grapes, so the owner of the field said, hey, you want to learn how to drive this? So I started learning how to drive the tractors back and forth down the road while him and his son would pick up all these boxes of crates and of grapes, and that was really cool. And I was getting paid for it. You know, I'd get paid $30 a month. And I bought this 10 speed. Back then there were 10 speeds. Anyway, I was 10 years old, and I know how to drive a 3-speed. My uncle has a van, and it has no seats in it except for these milk carton boxes. And they'd sit on those, and they'd put me in the front seat, and I'd drive them around while they drank in the back. And it was really cool because we'd ride all around in the outskirts of between Stratford, Hanford, Corcoran, and Lemoore. And when they'd start getting drunk, I'm starting to take sips of what they had. And they all drank whiskey, and I loved it. I liked the way it made, again, same effect. I liked the way it made me feel. And the best thing about this was I really enjoyed my uncles. They've always given me a pat on the back. They taught me how to ride horses. They taught me how to break them. And they were always telling me, good job, you know. So I really enjoyed being around them. And it wasn't that I wasn't afraid of the wild horses that we were breaking. It was because I knew I was going to get a good job, you know. And I'd get hurt a lot while I was doing those things for them. But again, I love the recognition that they would give me. So this 10-speed that I bought, I'm 10 years old, and we're over at this my uncle's friend's house, who's a bull rider, and I happened to ride my 10-speed over there, and I jumped through one of the windows, and there was about four of the tribal kids in there, and they're all drinking, and so I start to drink with them, and I remember jumping out the window because I didn't want to get caught. Well, I don't know if I didn't want to get caught. It seems that's what everybody else was doing. They were jumping out the window, so I followed. And when I got onto my 10-speed, it wouldn't work. And I kept wondering why it kept falling on me. I ended up getting it home. I didn't live far from there, but I ended up getting it home. And then the next day, everything was fine with that bike. It was me. I know that today. No. You know, there. When I talk about my drinking, when it really started for me, because I was having fun with a lot of the kids, it wasn't an every night thing, but it was whenever, as often as we could. But it was always a good time. And you know, as a kid, you just wake up and everything's fine. There was no hangovers yet. In high school, I started to feel those hangovers. We would go out and stay out all night, drink and party, sneak in, and the sun's starting to come up, and my dad would wake us up and make us go to school. And if you didn't go to school, you'd have to clean house all day, or you'd have to clean yard. And it was the worst, you know. And I'm about the worst kitchen cleaner as they come. I mean, pots and pans don't go in the sink. They go in the oven. You know, I went to a lot of the parties for high school, but I never made it to the party. We would start to, and I'm gonna think I'm gonna go ahead and go to the dance, and everything's gonna be cool and whatnot. We never made it that far. We never went to the football games like intended, you know. Would start to, and we'd. But as soon as there was always somebody in the crowd, you know, always somebody running with us who always got their hands onto something good. And then they'd share it, and it'd just get better and better, you know. We'd find people to buy for us. And like I said, high school, it was actually kind of fun. Not going to high school was actually kind of fun. I didn't graduate. I didn't graduate high school. In fact, I can barely read when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was illiterate. I spoke with a slang, a pigeon. Didn't know, didn't have a vocabulary except for the bad words. And I was scared to death when I got here, you know. When I was out there partying, I ended up having two kids. I didn't know how to be a parent to those kids. And the reason why I say that is I didn't really want to be a parent. My drinking had already gotten in the way. I was 18 when I had my first daughter. I already had been to jail off and on. I was already drinking in bars. I was drinking in bars at the age of 17. If you go to any outskirts, I don't know about now, but when I was 13, 14 years old, anywhere on the outskirts of Porterville, Tulare, or the Lemoore area, Stratford area, you can go into the bars and drink. At least I did. And I know I didn't look 21, you know. Maybe I did, I don't know. But and that was kind of like all we did. That's all we did was party. There was no other life than just to party. You know, I'm gonna go back to when I was 6 years old when I was being abused. There was a lot of drinking and a lot of partying going on in our home. It was an everyday thing. It wasn't once on the weekends. It was somebody was always drunk and very intoxicated. And we'd try to hide and put ourselves away or move objects that we knew either they can throw at and us get hurt or get stepped on. So we tried to make sure, and we were all small. You know, one time I remember everybody arguing and screaming, and I remember a door slamming really, really hard, and my little sister was in the way, and I remember it throwing her all the way across the room, you know, and nobody attended to her but us kids. The adults continued screaming, and then they all took off, you know. There was hardly ever food in the house. I didn't like Porterville. I didn't like the Indian reservation up on Thule. Some days I didn't see my mom or dad for 3 or 4 days growing up as a kid. One of my cousins who we buried day before yesterday, yesterday, he was a part of the Dark Ages with us, he died from this disease. Very hard, core drinker. He knew he was going to die and he wouldn't quit. They gave him 7 months and he didn't care. He just continued drinking. Couldn't live with it and couldn't live without it. He's 2 years younger than me. So I know how deadly and how devastating this disease is. This is a disease that will kill you. It will kill you if you don't start working this program. You know, when I admitted I was an alcoholic, actually when I first came in here, I was hoping against hope. I wasn't you people. I didn't want to be anything like you people. I was full of prejudice and full of anger and full of fear. I didn't like anybody. I didn't know anybody. And I couldn't look at myself. I didn't like the way I looked. I didn't like the way I felt. Who would want to even give me a hug? When they gave me a hug, it was just the strangest feeling I ever felt. We didn't hug in my family. But it wasn't because we didn't hug that made me feel strange. It was I really felt that disgusting about myself inside. I really thought, who can touch me? Who would even want to? So by the time I get into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I knew I didn't have a choice, because I started hearing some stories around the rooms, and some of the things that I held on to make me not an alcoholic was, one, I'm 22 years old. Two, I never had a DUI. And I didn't want to relate to anybody else's stories. I mean, that's all I wanted to know. And so I didn't know what a blackout was when I was out there drinking and using. My mom and dad, well, I never knew this until I got sober, but my dad used to cry for me. And I never knew that until after he passed away. My mom had told me that my dad used to cry. My dad had found me one time in a field beat up. But there were many times that I had been beat up and I wasn't found. You know, there was a lot of times that my mom would tell me, "You're going to die. We're going to find you one of these days and you're going to be dead." I had a roommate, and I loved my roommate because he kept the house clean and he cooked and he babysitted. And he used to tell me, "Mija, you're going to die." He says, "You're going to die. This stuff is going to kill you." And I just shake it off and I just continue drinking. But I really didn't know that that was my obsession to drink. I didn't know I lost all will to resist its demands. I didn't know any of that until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys ruined my drinking. You know? I started listening to some of the stories. And when I was drinking, I was so afraid every time I woke up. Every time I woke up, I was afraid because I never knew where I was. I didn't know if... There was sometimes I'd wake up and I'd wonder where my car was. And then the fog would start to lift, and as I come to, I start to see the steering wheel and the dashboard, and I'm in my car. Sometimes it was still running, you know. One of the scariest times for me is one time I was coming back. I don't know if I was coming back or going. All I know is I came to, and it's really, really foggy, and my car is running. And just like that, I come out of a blackout, and my car's still running, but I hear this god-awful noise, just loud, and I can feel my car is shaking. And I'm wondering what the heck is going on, and it's all foggy, so I can't see anything, but I didn't know it was fog. I thought I died and went to hell. And all of a sudden, I hear this ding, 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 and it's the train tracks, things lifting up. And I'm actually going with the train instead of on the road, you know. Those are just some of the things, you know. I mean, that's just one. There was many, many times I come to like that with the car still running. And many times I woke up in somebody else's house and not know whose home it was and who these people were. I came to one time coming down from the hills. I was partying up in Sycamore, California with a few tribal people up there, and I didn't know who they were, but I was partying with them. And when I came to, I'm driving in my car, and there's a lady sitting on the side of me, and she's stabbing me, and she's using a Phillips screwdriver, and I'm blocking it with my arm when I come to, you know. Stuff like that was happening to me, and I couldn't figure out why. I couldn't understand why all these things were happening. You know, when I was 6 years old, this abusive grandma used to make us all go to church. And when I stayed with them in Porterville, they made us all go to this school, this Catholic school called St. Anne's Catholic Church, or Catholic school. And I was there. I lasted there for 3 months. And I remember the nuns being mean. I didn't like the nuns. And I was the nun had spanked my hands with a ruler. And then to really humiliate me, they put me out in a hallway in this little box with these little holes, you know. And I didn't know really what I was doing wrong. I really don't remember quite what I had done wrong, what I said, or what was going on. But I do know that there was chaos going in the home. And I do know that I was against any type of religion, whether it be Christian or Christianity or Catholic. Or, you know, I really didn't know a whole lot of religions other than the two that was kind of forced down me. And it's hard to go to church and have faith in a God, a loving God, while all this destructive behavior is going on at home. And I'm, since I was 2 years old until I was 6 years old, I was being abused. I lived with my grandmother off and on. I remember moving twice back with my mom and dad back up in Porterville. When I was 10 years old, my grandmother took me back to my mom and dad. And they were living in Northern California at this time in a little place called Middletown, California. My dad was a logger, so we'd move from different spots, I guess. So it was a seasonal job for him. So when I went there, it was a completely different environment. No other family was with us. Except for my cousin's the one that just passed away. His whole family's gone now. He was the last one that passed away. But his family was with us, and everything was good because there was no drinking, there was no family fighting, there was no feuding going on. But I remember being very angry at my grandmother because when they took me up there, they left me, and I didn't want to stay there with them. But I was so grateful after, because that was the best year of my life when I was 10 years old until I was 11. And then when I moved back home to Lemoore, California, we left a two-story house and my dad's good-paying job. We lost our car, When we got back, we moved into my grandmother's garage. And I'm having to go to school, my mom cleaning us up the best way she could. And I'm embarrassed and humiliated again. You know, I grew up with a lot of embarrassment and a lot of humiliation, even in schools, any school, whether it be a Catholic school, whether it be a public school. You know, they've always taught us, talked about the Native Americans being savage and all this other stuff. You know, it's just... And it was kind of embarrassing when they'd show a picture of, or an old film of Native Americans, because they were naked, they just didn't look, you know, anything that they were picking on them for or taking from them, it just kind of made me sink down into my chair. There was nothing to be proud of, you know. And, you know, it wasn't until when I was 10 years old living up in Middletown, it was 1978, and it was the first year that... Native Americans got to practice their spiritual beliefs, and it was the first time I ever went to a sweat. I was 10 years old, and I got to watch that pioneer since I've been sober. I didn't know anything about it, but I do remember going to about 3 or 4 sweats while I was there up in that county. And when I came home again, my drinking started, and it just continued off until I ended up into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I remember a guy sitting in, I know I'm jumping around, but I remember this guy sitting in a meeting. It was his first night in the meeting. And he was a doctor, and he says, he asked if he raised his hand. He's very polite, wanted to share. And what he shared was his blackout. He said that every night after work, he comes home and he drinks a couple of glasses of wine with his dinner and his family. And everything's great, everything's cozy, and they all go to bed, and he does the same thing every day. Well, that the night before he showed up in that meeting, he had a blackout. He said he did the same thing, everything, had his glass of wine, but he didn't remember anything else after that, and he ended up drinking more than he knew. And that ended up in him in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I was a little upset about that, but I was more upset that he identified what a blackout was, because now I know it wasn't a damn brain tumor that I had. When I was out there drinking and using, I wanted that brain. I didn't want the brain tumor, but that was a good excuse to continue my drinking. You know, I diagnosed myself. I went to jail a lot when I was drinking, and it wasn't for anything major. It got major when I got sober, though. But when I was out there drinking and using, when I was getting picked up for, there was like 4 bars down all on one street, and I'd go from one, from the pub to the nightcap, back to Ruby's, and a cop would always pick me up right around 2:30, 2 o'clock, you know, because I'm still out there roaming around. I don't know if I'm coming or going. And I started getting kicked out of these bars all the time. I mean, I'm getting 86. They're chasing me out. They're waiting for me to come through the back door because I'm sneaky. I'll go in the bathroom and sit in there and drink. I'm not kidding you. As long as I have a drink, I don't care where I'm at or how I'm getting it, but I need that drink. And so they kicked me out. And there was this one bar. It was called the Tenampa. It was a Mexican bar. I don't speak a word of English or Spanish. And that's where I was hanging out. Because they weren't kicking me out, so I started drinking in this Mexican bar, you know. I'll tell you, my drinking, when I think about it, I have three sisters who drank, well, actually 2 sisters who drank with me. And when we get together, we joke and talk a lot of stuff. I mean, we do have a lot of fun with this because they're all sober too. One's got 19 years and the other one has 26 years. So we have a lot of fun together. We go to a trip to Las Vegas today and we just cut it up, man. We have a great time. My mom comes with us. My mom has 28 years. You know, when I was out there drinking and using, this grandma that raised me, I put her through a lot. I did. I put her through a lot of hell and through my torture. When I couldn't stop drinking and she'd want me to take the party somewhere else, I would borrow her car all the time. I would borrow her money. I would do everything and anything to get what I can from my mom, my grandmother, because I'm a taker. I've never given nothing back to my grandmother. And I didn't think I owed her anything either. I didn't. I thought everybody owed me still. I didn't ask for any of this. That was my attitude. My mom and dad, they didn't have a lot, and they were getting ready to go on a vacation, and I needed them to babysit, and nobody wanted to babysit for me, because I get a babysitter and I don't come home. I borrow your car and I don't come home. I could not get anything from anybody. Nobody would loan me nothing because they knew me. And if I did get it from you, and like this trip, my mom and dad's vacation, I begged and begged and begged and begged, and my mom finally gave in, and she kept the kids, and she said, "You better be here. We're leaving at 6 o'clock in the morning. You better come home." And as many times as I tried to come home, I begged my feet to take me home. I would beg my feet to get me out of that car and just walk home. And it just never would happen. And so I'd go to the bar and I'd try to think that maybe I can drink a Coke. And I'd drink the Coke and then I'd go into a blackout. You know, that's just the way it always happened for me. I understand my disease today. You know, I know that it's an obsession. I know that my disease starts here. So when my grandmother, when I bringing all these parties home back and forth, and the loud music and her never sleeping and me always borrowing and bringing back everything dirty, I she loaned me her car one more time and I took it, and I ended up selling it in the bar. You know, and I got angry at her for loaning it to me. It was her fault, not mine. Same thing with my mom and dad. When they didn't make it to their vacation, I didn't show up. And I was angry at them for trusting me. You know, why would you even, you know, I mean, I'm angry at these people. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I really don't know what foot was leading me into the car or was I getting out of the car. I would come to in blackouts and that's where I'd be, and that was my state of mind. So when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I started hearing this stuff about the steps, that was hard to swallow. I knew that I was alcoholic, but powerless. I never needed God since I was 6 years old. I can't remember a time during my drinking, me praying and asking God to get me out of this. In fact, if I got in a wreck, I would curse and laugh at him and say, "See, even you can't kill me." That's how that was the sickness and how far gone I was from spirituality. So when I came here to give myself to God, that was the tough one. And I thought I had to be right with God in order for him to accept me. And my sponsor said, "No, all you got to do is become willing to give yourself to him." And so I gave myself to him. And she asked me what was my beliefs. And I was scared to tell her. And it went back to that 10-year-old, the first time I ever been to a sweat. I wanted to believe in what I heard in those first four sweats I went to. And I explained to her what it was. And I'm not going to explain to you, but I explained to her what it was. And she said, "Anita, that's all perfect." She said, that's exactly what spirituality is. She said, "And if you want it, you got to pray for it." And I wanted it. I wanted it. I wanted to know who I was and why was I like this. I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew I didn't want to drink. By now, I had done step one and step two. I knew that my drinking was insane. Anybody who picks up after being sober, that's the insanity they're talking about. Not about the stupid stuff we do when we're drinking. You can have a normie get drunk and they're going to do stupid stuff. You know? So I did my, when I turned my will over to the care of God and I'm praying, something amazing happened. When I said I moved to Porterville, I had made a conscious decision to move to Porterville. And I'm living in my car and I'm living in this box and I'm living up in the hills and it's very, very cold that year. It's snowing. I don't have a dollar to my name. I have no, I don't have nothing. I don't have anything but hope and a willingness in this program. And when she told me to pray, I decided that that's what I was going to do. And I got to do a lot of praying while I was up there on that hill. And I lived there by myself. And I'm like 3-4 miles up there where nobody else is. And I ended up getting a job about 2 miles down the, no, it was about 3-4 miles down the hill. And there was a sweat there. And And I'm thinking, this is right on, man. Now I know why I'm here, and I know why my sponsor told me to pray for this. And I prayed, and that came, you know, and the job came and the sweats came. And I'm not kidding you. After I got the job, the very next day, this kid calls me. His name was Rico. Rico died from this disease. He got hit by a truck coming back from a powwow. But Rico called me. He says, hey, come on down here, sister. He says, come on down. I want to teach you a couple of songs. I didn't even know. I never knew any of our tribal singing, our language, or anything like that. And I got introduced to it. And those 2 years up in the mountains and doing what I was doing, man, I got to learn a lot, and I got a lot of stuff back. And you know that grandmother that... not the abusive, but the one that took care of me. When I got sober, when I moved back to town, my sponsor used to tell me, Anita, you're going to go to that grandma and you're going to do anything she wants you to do, and you're not going to ask for a dime. And I did. I did everything she had asked me to do, and I would take her anywhere she wanted to go. And I started building a relationship with that grandmother. I remember the first place I went after I celebrated my 5 years, I went straight to her house, and I was sitting on her bed, and my grandmother was very cleansly, and her bed was real firm and just always nice and neat, and I'm bouncing my medallion on her bed, and she asked me, what was that? And I said, it's my medallion, Grandma. I got 5 years of sobriety. I said, I haven't touched a drop. And she says, not one? And I said, not one. And she took it and she cupped it, and she says, I think I'll keep this. I knew my amends was made, and I knew what my sponsor was doing. You know, God's given me so much back in this program. And I'm going to say this. I was having a rough time at work, and I was going through a lot of struggling, and my grandmother, the one that abused me, she was passing. She was suffering from diabetes. And I was going back and forth from work, from Lemoore to Porterville, and I'd go into work at 6 o'clock in the morning, get off at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, drive to Porterville, stay there until 11 o'clock, and then do the same thing all over again. I wasn't doing it for this grandmother that abused me. I was doing it for my uncle. I was doing it for my aunt. I was doing it for my mom. I was doing it for my siblings and every other grandchild that my grandmother had. I wanted to be there because I wanted to be supportive of them because I loved them. That whole time I was there, I'm taking care of my grandmother, and I'm helping out, and I'm catering to my family. I'm getting them coffee. I'm going after breakfast. I'm going after whatever they needed. And something happened when they sent my grandmother home for hospice. That whole time we were at my grandmother's house, I'm back in her house, in the beginning I was kind of scared to go there, but I went there because of my family, my mother, and everybody else. And when I got there, I spent 3 weeks there. Well, back with my job, I ended up getting fired. I got fired from my job, and I went to Porterville, and I got to spend the rest of the time with my grandmother. My grandmother, she was already incoherent, so she didn't even know I was there. But the whole time, I'm changing her, I'm dressing her, I'm helping, giving her medicine, I'm brushing her hair, I'm keeping her lips moist, I'm making sure and that's not all I'm doing. I'm praying. I'm asking God to make sure my grandmother's comfortable. I want her to be at peace. And I'm moving her to her side, and I'm doing these things for 3 weeks straight. The day she died, I'm going to tell you right now, I felt a love for my grandmother that I've never, ever felt. If you don't think this program works and doesn't put you back with your family, you're going to miss out. This program, it's amazing. This is life. If you want to live, welcome. Keep coming back.